Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network as we switch gears. Talked with an author about her book and about raising chickens. We've got another author with us, and Jennifer Cheverine has been with us a number of times. She's a New York Times bestselling author. Her recent novel is titled Sonoma Rose. It's the 19th book in her Elm Creek Quilt series, and it's another good book. I think I've read almost every one. I might have missed one or two early on, but I've enjoyed every one of them, and this was certainly no exception. And she's a Wisconsin person, too. She lives in Middleton, Wisconsin, just outside of Madison, so it's great to have her back. Certainly thank you for listening in. You have, maybe you're a fan of Jennifer's books. Maybe you have a favorite, or do you have some questions about her books? Maybe you have questions about the Prohibition era. That's what she writes about a bit in her book, her latest book. And maybe you're a quilter, or maybe you have questions about that. Boy, we can talk about all kinds of things, can't we?
That's right.
Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And you can post a question or a comment, or maybe you've got a quilt photograph you want to send along. Do that as well. And it is great to have you back. It's been, it hasn't been that long.
No, it hasn't.
You're prolific.
Well, yes, my publisher keeps me on a tight schedule. I do try to make my readers happy. They tell me they want me to write faster. So we're aiming for 2 novels a year, and so far, so good.
So far, so good. And this latest is really fun. 19th, not the 19th.
That's right.
Do you ever think you'd get to 19 on this?
When I started out, I was just focusing on making that first novel the best it could possibly be. And I always, as I've told you before, I've always wanted to be a writer.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to, be able to continue to write stories that were fascinating to me and would entertain other readers. And I had no idea it would be a 19-book series at this point. Could not have imagined that.
And sure to be a 20-book series, too.
Oh, right? Yes.
Absolutely. We would have to have another one for sure. And I bet a whole lot more. Well, this one takes place, Sonoma Rose takes place in the Prohibition era.
It does. It's the 19th book in the series, but I also consider it a sequel of sorts to one of my earlier books.
Yeah.
The Quilter's Homecoming. Yeah. And in that story, I followed
Elizabeth,
one of the people from the Elm Creek Valley, which is the main setting for the series. And she married in 1925 and headed out to California with her new husband, where they tried to make a go of it. They thought they were the owners of a ranch, and that unfortunately turned out not to be true. And as Elizabeth and her husband are trying to make their way in Southern California, Elizabeth meets two people named Rosa and Lars, who have a tragic past. They were star-crossed lovers of a sort, and they had both made some bad choices earlier in their lives. But at the end of that book, which is all set in Southern California, they're forced to flee the Arboles Valley, and they're believed to be dead. And at the end of The Quilter's Homecoming, we learn that they had gone off to Northern California wine country, mm-hmm. and were married and had added to that. There were already Rosa's 4 children. They'd added 2 more, and that they were the owners of a thriving vineyard and winery in Northern California. And I chose that because they're both, I thought that they'd been through so much. Yes, they'd both
nice
done
to have something good.
Give them a happy ending. And they both were in love with the land. And I thought it wouldn't be a happy ending if I had them find factory work or an office job. So I thought, mm-hmm. what would be a wonderful happy ending? I thought, let's send them up to wine country and let them enjoy the beautiful countryside and all that wonderful life would offer them. And then,
it's certainly not perfect people, as you might
expect. No.
Not at all. Flawed characters there, I would think.
Flawed but realistic. But I thought that they should have a happy ending.
Oh, I agree, for sure.
And it wasn't until later, after that book came out, that I thought, well, wait a minute. I had them the owners of a thriving vineyard and winery during Prohibition, which was not a time where that happened very much at all. So I wondered, well, how did they manage to pull that off? And I decided to write Sonoma Rose to explore their story and find out how they did manage to make a go at it, how they managed to succeed with their new vineyard and winery at a time when it was, the climate was certainly not conducive to that.
You know, I had not thought of that at all. It was really interesting for me, and I was sure that you had done research on this so that the story that gets told in there is probably close to the story that many vineyard owners had.
Well, it was certainly a very difficult time for them.
Yeah.
And I read a lot of oral histories that had been transcribed and certainly did a lot of research, always starting right here at our wonderful Wisconsin Historical Society, but also traveling out to the Sonoma County and meeting with vintners and talking with local historians and just trying to get a good perspective of what it would have been like for these vintners and these grape growers who overnight, with the stroke of a pen in Washington, found their cherished, time-honored, often several generations family tradition of winemaking just suddenly illegal.
Yeah.
It was a pastime and a craft that had earned them not only a prosperous livelihood, but it also had made them pillars of the community.
Yes.
They were involved in their towns. They were involved in their neighborhoods. They made contributions. They created a culture and a largely immigrant culture, the Italian families that had been there. But some had been there for generations. And overnight, this livelihood was supposed to just go away. And that was quite a blow, not only financially, but also it was a challenge to their confidence. Because the one thing that had brought them so much honor and respect suddenly was something
taken away.
Absolutely. It was taken away, and it was something that was not only, you know, gone, but it was something that was supposed to be shameful and illegal. It was a very difficult emotional struggle as well.
Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today, author of her latest 19th book in the Elm Creek Quilt Series, this one titled Sonoma Rose. Wonderful to have her with us. Certainly great to have you listening. And give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. If you have a question about the book or about, as we're talking about Prohibition, we're talking about quilting. Man, lots of things to talk about with her today. Again, 1-800-642-1234. I think one of the, so we have Prohibition in there. We also have a disease issue, which I thought was quite interesting. And I don't know how much you want to talk about it in terms of the book, but celiac?
Yes, that's right. Well, there, Rosa has certainly some tragedies in her past, and the greatest of those was the loss of her four of her children. And they had suffered from this mysterious wasting disease, and none of the doctors in their valley knew how to treat it or knew what it was. And that idea of including that in the novel was actually inspired by research I did while researching The Quilter's Homecoming, where Rosa first appeared. And I had been reading a woman's memoir of her days growing up on an apricot orchard in Southern California. And she just mentioned, as an aside, this local family that had a tragic past because so many of the children had died mysteriously. And nobody really knew why. They didn't know if it was the bad water or if it was something else. But the mother and father were always kind of looked on with suspicion. And that no more information was given. I didn't know the name of this family, how many children they had lost. But I thought how tragic it is that, first of all, this mother has lost her children. But then this question and the shadow fall of suspicion falls upon her as well. So I decided later on when I was in Sonoma Rose, when I was further exploring the lives of these children and using them as more significant characters, I read over the symptoms and I thought, well, it sounds to me like it might have been a gluten problem. And so I did research into celiac disease, but of course not what it is for us today in the 21st century, but how they would have understood it in 1924, 1925 in this isolated rural community. And unfortunately, the advice that was usually given to the parents of these children suffering from these from these symptoms was give them good, wholesome food, like good bread. And, of course, that was the absolute worst possible thing you could do for someone with a wheat gluten allergy. And so I have Rosa dealing with that question, too, that she had been following the doctor's advice and doing what she thought was best for her children, and it turned out to be so wrong. And right around this time, Dr. Sidney Haas came out with this study that he had conducted about how children suffering from these symptoms tended to do very well if they were fed a banana diet. And so he had done research and conducted studies and found that if children were given rice and bananas and those kind of foods, that they tended to see a great deal of improvement, even complete cures. Now, of course, looking back on it from our modern perspective, we know now that it wasn't because they were eating so many bananas.
No.
It was because they weren't eating bread. They weren't eating breads and rolls and crackers. And so there was the food substitution that helped. But this would have been right around Rosa's time. And so I thought that this is something that maybe these children would have been able to benefit from.
Wow. I wondered how that came. I thought, well, is there something like that in her family or not? But it was just your good research.
Well, I also had friends who've had, especially when our kids were younger and we'd get together for playgroup and we'd have to have a snack that we would share.
Oh, yeah.
There were some children who had problems with gluten. And so we all tried to make sure that we, read our labels on our packaging very carefully, or went on the internet and found some great gluten-free recipes that kids would like. And so it was something that, because of my friends' experiences with their children, it's something that I became more aware of and more sensitive to.
Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today, and she will be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. So glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, one of the things I really enjoy most of being on the air is to be able to feature Wisconsin authors on this program. And our guest today is New York Times bestselling author Jennifer Cheverini. And she's from Wisconsin. The latest installment in her Elm Creek Quilt series has just been released. Is it today, I believe?
Hey, today is publication day.
Yeah, it's called Sonoma Rose. It takes place in Prohibition-era California, and she's with us to talk about what makes this book special and how she goes about researching and writing her books, and certainly willing to answer your questions and take your comments when you call in at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. We'll be back right after the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking with Wisconsin author Jennifer Cheverini, who a New York Times bestselling author, as a matter of fact, and she has a new book out. Her most recent book is called Sonoma Rose, and it's the 19th book in her Elm Creek quilt series. Happy to have her back. I've finished the book. I really enjoyed reading it, and I think you will as well. And I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to what she has to say about what goes on in the book. Give us a call with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. And so we've got there are a number of themes in the book. So we've got prohibition is one of the themes, the vineyards and growing grapes for wine and making wine. That was a fascinating story for me as well. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was fascinating for me learning about it, and both learning about what's going on today and then learning how it differed from what the grape growers and vintners would do during Rosa's era. And it was wonderful to go out to Sonoma County, Sonoma Valley, and meet with vintners and take tours, sample a little research wine now and then, and hear about how things had changed and how so many important traditions had remained the same.
Yeah, it had to be a lot of fun. And there was one other, well, not one other. There were several other themes running through, but one other theme was domestic violence.
Yes, that's true. That's something that comes up. And I try to, because I know a lot of my readers might not expect that theme, even if they had read The Quilter's Homecoming, where that did first mm-hmm. come up. But I wanted to keep it true to the era and keep it true to the character of Rosa. What was her limit? And what would the neighbors have done in 1924, 1925? And also for Lars, too, he and Rosa had been involved before her marriage to John, who her abusive husband. And I needed to think, too, about what would have been true to him. How long would he be able to remain at a distance when the woman he loved was going through such terrible things? But it was most important for Rosa, who had been through so much, had made some bad choices, had made what she had considered some sinful choices based upon her religious faith. And the transformation she went through early in the book, from believing that she had to just tolerate it, that was her role as a wife, that was her role as a mother, and also her feelings of guilt. She had betrayed her husband, and in some mm-hmm. ways she thought that this was her just punishment, to be miserable for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
And I think it was very important for her to make that dramatic break from John, to know that not only for her own sake, but for her own sake, but for the sake of her children too, she had to do what was right. She had to get free of him to protect herself and also to protect her children.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I don't want to make this book sound like a very downer book at all. It's a very exciting book.
Well, there is a lot that goes on, and there's a lot of hope in the book, too.
Yeah.
And starting from Rosa's break from John, despite her lingering fears that he might come after her, and despite her lingering guilt that she had not always been perhaps the most faithful and dutiful of wives. And there's so much joy when they do reach the Sonoma Valley, when the children do start to have... to respond to the treatment that they find in San Francisco. And then once Rosa and Lars are both not only to be able to reconnect with themselves, but also to reconnect with the land, and to they find so much beauty in the cultivation of crops. And although the vintners that they met and the grape growers that they met in Sonoma County were struggling, there was so much joy in their family lives. There's so mm-hmm. much happiness and contentment in cultivating the land, in the beauty of the land, and in the celebration of good hard work that they accomplish. That's something that's very inspiring to Rosa, and it's something that heartens her and keeps her going despite the economic struggles of the time and despite the fears that not only her husband, but the police investigating his crimes and John's
organized
crimes. Yes. John wanted to buy himself a fancy new roadster and enjoy some other trappings of success. And so he kind of fell in with an unsavory crowd who promised him riches. And Rosa took off with a suitcase of mob cash when she fled the Arboles Valley. So she has lots of reasons, lots of very sensible reasons for changing her identity and losing herself far, far away from the Arboles Valley.
I'm glad you gave her the money, though. I mean, she was going through enough as it was.
Well, sure. And that was something that, not knowing that I would write Sonoma Rose later, that was something I actually had put in The Quilter's Homecoming, that the feds did come and find lots of contraband stored up in the hayloft.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And there were two suitcases full of cash. And when I was reading over that book and thinking, you know, maybe there were two suitcases of cash by the time the feds got there. What if there had been more? And let's say Rosa took some of that with her. So I thought, yeah, I can see Rosa doing that.
Yeah, I can see her doing that too. Jennifer Cheverini, our guest, give us a call with your questions or comments as we visit with her about Sonoma Rose of the Elm Creek Quilt Series. Taking place in the Prohibition era in California. It was a lot of fun to read it. And you may have a question about it. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Had a caller in Nina who would love to hear your books on Chapter a Day on Wisconsin Public Radio. Would you be open to that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think it was maybe back in 2005, I think it was, that my novel, The Christmas Quilt, was a part of A Chapter a Day. So,
it was.
And that was wonderful. I heard so many good things from listeners who enjoyed hearing it. And it was right around the holiday season, too. So, of course, it was perfect timing for a holiday-themed book. So, absolutely, that was a wonderful experience for me. I know my readers loved it. They listened. If they're lucky enough to live in Wisconsin, they were able to listen to the broadcast. Other people listened online. And I would love to do that again. That would be wonderful.
I'll have to put that bug in their ear again.
Oh, and may I recommend Sonoma Rose? No.
Actually, I was thinking Sonoma Rose would be a good one.
Well, you talk to the people who make those decisions and let them know I'm happy to participate.
Oh, well, you had Rosa, by the way. You mentioned quilts, and we haven't talked about quilts, but she did make quilts for each of her children.
She did, and that's another, we talked a little bit earlier about how there are so many hopeful and joyful moments once the family breaks free and mm-hmm. once they get away from John, the source of so much pain and unhappiness in their lives, both Rose's and the children, and Lars as well. But once they come and they find sanctuary, they've hired on, Rose and Lars have hired on to help a family run their farm and run their orchards and their winery too. And once they have a nice cabin, Rosa is determined to turn it into a cozy home for all six of them. And so she decides to make each of her children a quilt, somehow suiting their personality. Her youngest son had enjoyed the ride up on the train so much that she decides to make him a railroad crossing quilt. And for her eldest daughter, who really is just her right-hand girl,
yep,
just her strongest supporter and just most loyal of her children, and all the wonderful things that you expect an eldest daughter to be. And she, Rosa decides to make her a loyal daughter quilt. So she's working on these things too. And she also, another farm wife, becomes a good friend, and she also offers this woman quilting lessons. So it's a theme that occurs once Rosa has stopped fleeing and feels like she can put down roots again. She's able to go back to this handicraft that to her represents family and home and comfort.
Yeah. Cindy in Pinoki Mountains, we are turning to you. Thanks for calling.
Well, hi. I just have to say I own a bed and breakfast here, and one of my guests recommended the Elm Creek series for me, and I started to read it and became a quilter a year and a half ago. I have made about 8 or 9 quilts, numerous table runners, tote bags, and just gotten all enthused by it. And I'm frustrated when I can't quilt because we're busy, but just wanted to tell her how much I enjoyed the series, and especially with Sylvia, who is my favorite character of all time, and how much you've stimulated a lot of happiness in our household and our family by the results of me having become a quilter.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad to hear that. It's always fun for me to hear that people have decided to take up the art of quilting because they see how much my characters enjoy it. And I'm so glad to hear that you've really just run with it and it's brought you a lot of happiness. That means a lot to me.
Well, thank you. I used to be an oil painter, and I don't have time for that anymore.
Too busy quilting.
That's right. Well, with quilting, you can pick it up and you can set it aside, and you know, and then you can go back to it. You can make little handwork projects that you can take along with you. And if you're waiting in the line at the post office or at the doctor's office, you can take a few stitches and make a little progress on a block. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, it is a lot of fun. The only one drawback is when I hear people refer to it as crafting.
Oh.
And quite frankly, things I've created and several of my new friends have created are pieces of art. And I get a little annoyed by that because it's not a craft, it's an art.
Well, I am right there with you. You are preaching to the choir. Well, but you know what? This is I understand your frustration. No one likes to hear something that when you know that it's an art form, it's tough to hear someone speak of it as anything less. But this is an opportunity for you to educate them and let them know, you know, there's so much more to it than you realized. And I think if you encourage them to go to a quilt show and see what goes into it, or maybe even see you make it work on a quilt yourself, and they really understand the process. Or, you know what, suggest that they read one of my books, and then they'll really get the, I think, especially one of the ones like Quilter's Apprentice, where I talk so much about the process that goes into making a quilt, the artistry, the technique. They might get a different perspective on what this is all about. It's not, a paint-by-numbers kit. There's a lot of creative choices and artistic decisions that go into each and every quilt or even table runner that everyone makes.
Mm-hmm. It's the fabric as much as anything. And it just amazes me that you can fall in love with fabric. And that's what's happened here.
Cindy, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And you know what? We'll have a little prize or a little present here for readers of your book. We can do a giveaway of pins. Give away a pin, Judith? How many did you say? Two pins? One pin?
I have a little
one pin.
One pin. One pin. We're going to give away one pin. Okay.
We'll do a pin. And just call in 1-800-642-1234. Wait a minute. We'll give away 10 pins.
Well, I was going to say, because I've got a little bag of 10 pins right here.
Oh, and you only
want to give away one?
No. So call in 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us and tell us your favorite book of Jennifer's. 1-800-642-1234. And we've got, and it won't take long to fill that. Those pins, by the way, talk about those pins for a minute.
Sure. Well, quilters love pins. We collect them at quilt shows, at quilt guild meetings, and sometimes we trade them, but they're just a fun thing that quilters like to have. And so I decided to create some to go along with my novels. And they've been very popular. Readers really enjoy them. And sometimes I'll go to a book signing in a state that I've never visited before, and then someone will have all of the pins on their on their lapels. So it's a lot of fun. It's just a fun thing to do. So I did.
So you did one for Sonoma Rose?
I absolutely did one for Sonoma Rose. And I took two quilt blocks, one from a quilt that's mentioned in the story, the Arboles Valley Star.
Mm-hmm.
This quilt block also appears on the beautiful illustrated end papers. Melanie Martyr Parks has done beautiful watercolor paintings for the end papers, as she has for all of my books since the fourth one. So it's been a nice collaboration for many years. And then another quilt block that I designed called Sonoma Rose. So the new pins have both of those.
Can I see one?
You can see all 10. There you go. And so I brought along a bunch because
are they cool? They're beautiful.
Oh, thank you. And it's just a nice little souvenir.
Oh, man. Matt, we're going to be really busy, and I love I love your color, your cover too. By the way.
They did an absolutely beautiful job.
Wonderful painting.
Yes, it's very evocative of the Sonoma Rose Vineyards and Orchards, which is the wonderful place where Rosa and Lars eventually find themselves.
Yeah, it's really, and you've done, and the same person has done.
No, this is the first time working with this illustrator.
So with this illustrator.
So
okay.
I think longtime readers will see a difference in, compared
to... In the look
of the book. But, so many of the themes are, of course, the same, and characters that we've met. And so it's definitely very much a part of the Elm Creek Quilt series.
And we have another caller who wanted me to have you spell Cheverini.
Okay, here goes. C-H-I-A, V as in Verona, E-R-I, N as in November, I. And that is how my children have learned how to spell it, by hearing me spell the name over the phone to people for many, many years. That's how they learned to spell their last name.
C-H-I-A-V-E-R-I-N-I.
That's correct.
And I am pronouncing it correctly, I hope, Chiaverini.
That is not the Italian pronunciation. The Italian pronunciation is Chiaverini.
Oh.
But my in-laws from Pittsburgh area pronounce it Chiaverini, and it was their name many, many years before it was mine. So if they want to say it Chiaverini, I am going with Chiaverini.
All right. Well, we have an email from Susan who says, hi, Larry and Jennifer. From Pennsylvania. I'm excited about your new book publishing today. I've read all your books, enjoyed them very much, got your postcard, and I'm trying to find this book. So I checked your website. Does this new book cover the quilts of 1930s? Those are some of my favorite quilts of the 20th century.
Well, this book, we do see a little bit in the conclusion that takes place in the 1930s, but most of it is within that time frame of 1925, 1927. So we don't quite get to the 1930s. But I agree. There are just so many beautiful quilts and new types of fabric that in the 1930s, in the Depression era. And so I think I might need to write another book about Lars and Rosa, or perhaps about Elizabeth and Henry, so that I can explore that time period of American history a little bit more. But this book stays pretty much within the late 1920s.
Yeah, it does indeed. And I think it was you have a real touching love story here, and you have a story, a European-American and a Mexican-American, two people. Were those relationships common in the 1920s, or was something...
Well, California has been known for being a melting pot, even perhaps more so than the rest of the United States. But their families, and what kept Rosa and Lars apart more than their cultural heritage, were a conflict between their families. One of Rosa's ancestors had received the land that eventually became called Triumph Ranch, from the King of Spain, because by virtue of his deeds serving in the military when Spain ruled that entire region of what became the United States. But like happens so often in Southern California, period of great thriving harvests would be followed by a period of drought. And when that came along, many farmers had to sell the land, and ranchers as well, had to sell the land for whatever they could, salvage what they could of their lives and go start somewhere else. And Rosa's family got caught up in that. There was a year, and this mirrored a period of actual drought in the Conejo Valley, which is the real life counterpart. So Rosa's family had the land. Lars's ancestors bought it from them. And so there was a lingering resentment, which pretty much made it impossible for Rosa and Lars to be together and still, on Rosa's part at least, stay connected with her family. So that conflict, that feud, forced a lot of choices upon Rosa that led to her unhappy marriage to another man.
Dale in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. Okay, I'd like to talk to the lady about the quilting. And I met a woman who came up north from down south. She probably had 50 quilts. She was selling them for $5 a piece, and I found out that they are worth like 100 at least per. Does that make any sense?
Well, I'm wondering, when was she selling her quilts for $5? Is this a recent story, or is this...
Well, it's about something like 20 years old, maybe a little more.
Wow. Go ahead.
It's fascinating. She came up from the south, and my point is, all the women in the south, down the southern part of the U.S., made quilts. I mean, almost all of them. Does that make any sense?
Well, the price doesn't make much sense to me. I have to say, I thought, was this back in the turn of this many, many years ago, when that would have been a good price for a quilt? I don't really have a good explanation for that. I think probably a lot of quilters listening in are looking at their radios with shocked expressions to hear that,
and wishing they'd been around when those were being offered.
That's right,
$5 a piece.
Well, I don't know. I can only imagine, as a novelist would, what would compel a woman to bring her quilts up from the south and sell them at such a low. There must have been some reason for her to want to sell them off at so low a price when they probably could have earned a little bit more. Yeah. But I'm not really sure. But yes, certainly women in the South make beautiful quilts. Women in the Midwest, right here in Wisconsin, make wonderful quilts too. So I'm not sure. I sure would like to hear more about that story. And there must be there's probably a whole novel in that.
I was just thinking the same thing.
It's very intriguing.
Dale, thanks for calling. And in 30 seconds, you've got another book on the way, I'll bet. You're working on a new one.
Yes, I am. I have another book coming out in October called The Giving Quilt, and it's another contemporary story set at Elm Creek Manor.
And I wanted to mention, you're reading tomorrow in Milwaukee, are you not?
I am. Tomorrow I'll be at the Milwaukee Public Market at 5:30 at an event co-sponsored by Boswell Books and Thief Wine. So we'll have some wine to celebrate Sonoma Rose. So that's tomorrow at 5:30. But tonight at 7, I'll be right here in Madison at the Westown Barnes & Noble. We won't be having wine, but we will be having quilt pins to give away and quilts to show. And I'll be doing my very first reading from Sonoma Rose and lots of fun with the audience.
Thank you. And that's tonight, Barnes & Noble, Mineral Point Road in Madison.
Jennifer,
thank you so much.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have her. Jennifer Cheverini. We'll have her back again. And thank you for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.